Two remarkable South African clinical psychologists, Marilyn Davis Schulman and Kim Lazarus, recently returned from an emotionally intense visit to Israel, where they were joined, or where they joined, I should say, the Association of Jewish Psychologists on a tour of the massacre sites. Now back home, they're turning that experience into education and healing for both therapists and trauma survivors, and they join us both on the line. Marilyn, if I can start with you, what did it mean for you personally and professionally to accompany the Association of Jewish Psychologists on the massacre, or to the massacre sites in Israel?
First of all, thank you very much for inviting Kim and myself. It's an honor and a privilege to be able to share what we went through, and it's great to be on this line. Just in terms of your question, I think it was an incredible opportunity to exchange ideas, meet new colleagues, share learning, and also standing on the ground and in the places where such unspeakable atrocities happened was profoundly humbling. And I think that as a trauma specialist, I've worked with human suffering, and it brought into painful, stark clarity about how fragile life is and the deep human need for safety and connection and meaning, especially in the aftermath of terror. Now, so that's my view of the personal.
Was there anything that really shocked or surprised you about what you saw on the ground?
Well, in terms of, you know, it was a profound, packed, intense, lots of lectures, meeting specialists all over Israel. So in terms of that, they're quite hard to keep up. And we've only got so much capacity to absorb and absorb. Mm. But in terms of just reaffirming the universality of trauma and I think for me, what the most important thing was, walking on the sites where these things had happened was quite shocking. And the surprise that I took away was a real awareness of life carries on. Coffee shops are full, people are out and about. So yeah, that was me. And Israel is a country of such diverse people. So it was fascinating how things do in fact just carry on.
Kim, was there a specific moment during the tour that left you at a loss for words, something that hit you on a deeper, maybe unexpected level?
I think kind of this aha moment came for me quite early on. It was in the introductory session on the first day where everyone was introducing themselves. And I think for a long time leading up to this trip, I had felt so isolated in trying to make sense of my personal and professional identities on the backdrop of a post-October 7th world in the diaspora. And here I found myself surrounded by psychologists from around the world who were expressing a similar struggle. And it sounds so obvious, but I didn't realize it up until that point. Here we were, strangers to one another, from different contexts and environments, but yet we all expressed a similar desire or motivation to be on this trip. At that moment, I realized our interconnectedness. And in this, I felt so understood and seen, and it gave me permission to engage in a more vulnerable and authentic way.
Kim, yeah. What struck you the most about the trip to Israel and what you saw on the tour?
I think for me, what struck me the most in a post-October 7th Israel was a coming together of dualities, the integration of juxtapositions, you know, as Marilyn was saying. Israel is more broken, but at the same time, it's also more whole. There was so much pain and suffering, but also so much strength and resilience. Something for sure shifted in the fabric of the people. There's a softness and an unspoken understanding. I think another thing that really struck me was the awe and admiration of the Israeli people, the ingenuity, the industriousness, their ability to pivot and evolve to meet the needs of the hour. And as well as the immense value that they place on mental health, it's really second to none.
Marilyn, if I can ask you, how do you recognize when somebody is stuck in survival mode and unable to shift from that into healing or rebuilding? And following on from that, would you say that Israeli society right now is stuck in survival mode, or have they been able to move on?
It's interesting that you ask that, because trauma changes the stress pathways. We know that. And it impacts on how we think, how we interact, how we interrelate with our close people. And if stress is prolonged, it leads to obviously traumatic stress, which could lead on to post-traumatic stress. And there's even a new designation now called continuous traumatic situation, which is the situation in Israel. But I think the survival mode is programmed into the Israeli psyche. When we were there, there were no sirens. But I've been on lots of online programs where in the middle of an online training, a siren will go off, the presenter will get up, walk to the safe room, wait until the all clear, and come back and continue the
conversation.
And everyone just waited. So my whole opinion is that they are incredibly resilient people. But that said, without a doubt, the impact of October 7th and the aftermath and the hostages not coming home yet have, as Kim said, weighed heavily on the people. It's an unspoken, just a frustration and deep desperation. In terms of survival mode, if you think about it, means autopilot. They're going about their duties or their lives, carrying on as normal, not really being in them because of the level of trauma. So we know that trauma is fight. The response to any trauma is fight, flight, freeze, and then submerged or fawn. So in actual fact, they have to survive. But mothers have to be there for their babies. They have to be available for their babies. And there's lots of research around the impact of the trauma on the mothers, which impacts on the children, and how to help these parents get through this and not be in survival mode, be in the moment, use like mindfulness and other techniques to try and continue in a way that they are in their lives, not witnesses to their lives.
We in the South African Jewish community, and I would say diaspora communities more broadly, have been also deeply affected by the horror of what happened. Kim, if I can ask you, what advice would you offer us right now?
I think as Jews in South Africa and the diaspora in general, as you say, we can often feel so helpless and isolated. We are constantly bombarded by media and social media that can often feel as though we as a Jewish people are being demonized and vilified. My advice would be is to find your connection, connect with your community, your identity, and find the anchors that ground you and help you stand strong. Channel your helplessness into purpose and try to create meaning for yourself in this purpose. I met an incredible man who started a feeding scheme for soldiers on the Gaza border, and what he said stuck with me. He said, no matter what you feel, do good. Whether you feel sad, lonely, angry, use those feelings and do good. And I think that's what my advice would be, is to find those moments of connection, find those places of connection, and turn those feelings of helplessness into purpose.
And Kim, you've spoken before about the resilience of the human spirit. What moments on the tour most shifted or deepened your understanding of that?
It was actually something one of the psychoanalysts had said. Her name is Mayrav Roth, and it really stuck with me. She said we need to reimagine intergenerational trauma as a tool and not a curse. She spoke about how some of her clients had been able to draw on their parents' and grandparents' stories of survival. And as unfortunately, as we know, as Marilyn was saying, you know, trauma is the story of the Jewish people. But as much as I say that, we also need to recognize that so is resilience. And we attach to our collective memory and build on that narrative of resilience. I actually saw a sign in one of the newly refurbished areas of Kfar Aza, and for me it encapsulated this so profoundly. It said in Hebrew, building from new, our Israeli story. Yeah. And we need to acknowledge and make space for the trauma, never disregard it, but also use it as a tool of empowerment.
And Marilyn, for you, are there any lesser-known trauma interventions that you have found maybe even surprisingly powerful in your practice?
So we know that with any trauma treatment, the most important thing is to stabilize the patient or the person and ensure that they are safe. That's step one across the board, because the brain can't distinguish between whatever it is they're feeling currently versus what really happened previously. So when people come to us and they are triggered, we have to stabilize their nervous system and manage the hypervigilance, the anxiety, the numbness, the detachment, the dissociation, and that's step one. In terms, and then you, the newest and most important thing is, we were all trained to do trauma debriefings, but what's come out in the research is that telling the same story over and over again, in fact, deepens the trauma pathway. And that is not the way to do trauma treatment anymore. It's more about meaning, finding meaning for the person and holding them through the various intrusive memories that they are experiencing. And so in terms of, we use EMDR. We use a lot of body work. We do a lot of work on, you know, what are you feeling in your body? Stay with that feeling. There's neurofeedback. There's also IFS, which is internal family systems, which is non-pathologizing. We're trying to take the pathology away from an abnormal event that happened to the person and it resulted in these kind of symptoms.
Marilyn Davis-Shulman and Kim Lazarus, thank you both for weighing in on such an important topic. And just a reminder to our listeners that on the 20th of July in Johannesburg, both of you will be addressing a session to the South African Association of Jewish Mental Health and Allied Practitioners, and it's open to the public as well. And you can get more details about that if you listen to our community notices, and you can register online.